Okay, good evening everybody, welcome. Let's chant the refuges and precepts together. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato Samma Sambuddhassa. Buddham Saranam Gacchami. Dhammam Saranam Gacchami. Sangham Saranam Gacchami. Dutiyampi Buddham Saranam Gacchami. Dutiyampi Dhammam Saranam Gacchami. Dutiyampi Sangham Saranam Gacchami. Tatiyampi Buddham Saranam Gacchami. Dutiyampi Dhammam Saranam Gacchami. Tatiyampi Sangham Saranam Gacchami. Panatipata Veramani Sikkhapadam Samadhiyami. Atinadana Veramani Sikkhapadam Samadhiyami. Abrahmacharya Veramani Sikkhapadam Samadhiyami. Musavada Veramani Sikkhapadam Samadhiyami. Suramariya Majapamadatana Veramani Sikkhapadam Samadhiyami. Vikala Pujana Veramani Sikkhapadam Samadhiyami. Nachakita Vadita Visukhadasana Malakanda Vilepana Dharana Mandana Vibhusanatana Veramani Sikkhapadam Samadhiyami. Uchasayana Mahasayana Veramani Sikkhapadam Samadhiyami. Idamme Silam Makapala Jnanasa Pachayo Hotu. So before I get into tonight's talk, I hope you can all hear me. Yes, Excellent. I just want to acknowledge what an honour and privilege, and it sounds a bit cliched, but I actually mean it, to have one-to-ones with you all. And today I was particularly feeling a lot of appreciation for the sense of shared inquiry. And I'm just sitting together and meeting, and I really hope that that listening to a talk like the one I'm going to give can be in that same spirit, although I talk a bit more than you in this context. But maybe on some level it can still be a conversation, you know, and that it's... I think that helps me to keep talking if I feel like there's some kind of, you know, even in the unspoken, a sense of you know, listening. And really, I'm going to offer quite a few different teachings and reflections and images as I'm continuing with that kind of particular interest this month. And really hope that you can kind of listen in that way that I appreciate when I'm sitting in the yogi seat and I listen to a talk, and I don't know what it is like for you, but for me it's like a very grounded, open kind of space, or where my intention is just to be present and see just... See, just let the Dharma kind of do its magic. Well, or yeah, just listening for sometimes particular images or teachings that resonate. So, and so this evening I'd like to offer some reflections around the nivarana, the hindrances, that experience of feeling, you know, obstructed, or so many different ways that these can manifest. And I'll kind of, will obviously center around the Buddha's list of five. But I really invite you, you know, to kind of let the talk maybe be present with you, be a support to whatever is around in your heart, in your mind, that feels troubling or difficult, so that I think these teachings can really help, you know, just if we stay around with of how we're feeling right now, or just what's around for us through the day, or you know, just this sort of maybe larger bracket of just troubling mind states or emotions, or that kind of area. And I often, when I'm reflecting and teaching on these, I find it particularly helpful and to kind of also, or at times, touch into the sense of the mind, or the potential of the mind, or we might remember or imagine the mind that is free from hindrance, unobstructed, clear. And maybe more accessible than we think. Like, I'm getting a bit of a sense of that now as I'm saying that. It's like a kind of looking behind you or something. I just, oh, you know, there's experience, not all of it's pleasant, but actually, oh, okay, that's different from half an hour ago. It's actually a bit of, oh, and I feel a certain sense of uplift actually from being with you in the hall, and who knows, many conditions. So just sensing, or like for you right now, you know, maybe just very simple kind of sense of, oh, the, it might just be sense of, oh, just sitting here. Could be worse. I like to put the bar very low. I find that very encouraging. Right? Okay, happy, happy. So the Buddha, somewhere in the suttas, don't have the specific reference. The nature of mind is radiant and pure. It is obscured by visiting defilements. So I guess, yeah, this kind of sense of the potential, but also maybe there's a little bit of radiance right now. Certainly some purity. We've all been training quite a while. Maybe we're not completely 100% pure, but my goodness, there's some goodness here. It's really worth acknowledging. So, this sense of visiting defilements, I mean, this, again, different words, maybe that's a word that I find it quite sobering, you know. It's like, oh, yeah, this is... So as I often do when I do a talk on the hindrances, if you will bear with me, my favourite hindrance poem, The Guest House by Rumi. And in terms of a treasure trove of imagery, I mean, so again, you know, if that theme is of interest to you, you can sort of kind of listen out for, oh, you know, anything that feels like it might be a helpful image for you. This being human is a guest house. Every morning, a new arrival. A joy, a depression, a meanness. Some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all, even if they're a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture. Still, treat each guest honourably. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whoever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. So we could easily spend the whole talk on that poem, but I'm not going to do that. I always feel moved by it, and I feel like there's this kind of, you know, this basic invitation which I've been hearing in the teachings ever since I started practice, you know, decades ago, remembering one of my first teachers, Christina Feldman, saying, turn towards what's difficult. Turn towards what's difficult. Like, and how impossible that has seemed at times. And then possible, and, you know, just something about this poem that it turns you completely around, doesn't it, to be grateful for whatever comes. It's very radical, I think. I always feel like, you know, this poem kind of invites you, invites me to kind of go beyond my sense of myself, what I can and can't bear, who I am, you know, all of that. The possibility that these different kinds of difficulties, of difficult emotions, for example, the sense that they are, or they can be teachers, guides from beyond. I find that very inspiring, right? And I wanted to share a teaching from Thich Nhat Hanh that is another way of maybe really inviting us to consider, to remember, and to explore in our actual experience, you know, how can these difficulties be turned to and practiced with and seen and worked with and related to in ways that actually make them fuel for awakening, actually draw the energy from them into the awakening factors, you know, actually strengthen mindfulness, actually grow compassion. I find that very, very important to remember and easy to forget. So Thich Nhat Hanh, if we are aware of the paradise around us, it is because we have tasted suffering and we have learned how to practice with it and how to transform it into happiness. And the little I know of him and his life, you know, you have a sense of a man who really, a person, a being who really, he really lived that in a very inspiring way. So, again, let the images come and go if they feel like they're coming a bit thick and fast, but the image of the gardening, which I mentioned, I think, yesterday. It feels like about a week ago. It was yesterday. That time thing. This sense of the, you know, the compost and the sort of weeds and bits of grass and stuff that's then food peelings and that then becomes this rich kind of gunky mess that you put into the soil, and it makes flowers, or helps flowers to grow. I find that a really, also somehow, how do we compost our muck, you know, and our sort of rather, you know, unpalatable bits and pieces and unwanted bits and pieces. I think it has a lot to do with embodiment and breathing and, yeah, the sort of healing that happens through that and through the Brahma Viharas, and all of our practice really is doing that work. Another image from the Buddha I wanted to bring in, again, this sense of, you know, the mind made great, being like a great lake, and a small handful of salt that if you put it into a small cup would make that water very, very salty. If you put it into a great lake, it doesn't really change the taste of the water. And I think sometimes, again, that our mind is, you could say, already great, meaning big, right? And just remembering that, because the dukkha, the hindrance experience, is so constricting, narrowing, smallifying, if that's a word, kind of blinkering. So again, all of these words, or a lot of them, aren't they, kind of carry images like blinkers on a horse or something. You know, you can't see kind of the bigger picture. They're filtering, and they tend to distort or direct perception in very particular ways. And knowing this, I almost feel like, you know, I've actually never done it, but I'm kind of thinking, what if I did a whole retreat where I just practiced with the hindrances? You know, that's the theme, that's the topic. Well, it's right there, isn't it, in the fourth foundation, mindfulness, so maybe that would be okay. I think you'd have to be brave to do that, but, you know, to really turn to face these, to bring mindfulness to them. I don't know about you, but I feel like something like 96.3% roughly of what's difficult is our reaction to what's difficult. I mean, really, I mean, and I know that's not the end of the story or the solution, but wow. I mean, I think that becomes most obvious when you really, because talking to someone today about mindfulness of thoughts, which I was mentioning yesterday, and how you kind of go, right, okay, come on then. Like one of my teachers once gave the image of you're like sitting by a hole where an animal, you know, lives, like these animals that live in the ground, like chipmunks, you know, and you just like sit there, just waiting. And I think, I don't know if you, this is, I've found that when I do this, I'm really struck by how the thoughts all go really quiet. They're like hiding underground. Thank God. She's looking at the hole. Well, wait till she's not looking. Okay, she's not looking. Come out. And look at the hole again. And they go quiet again. Thank God. You know, it could be a game, couldn't it? Why not? Can't we play in our Dharma practice sometimes? Yeah. No, I want to. Yeah, anyway. So, yeah, being mindful of the hindrances. So I want to use this wonderful little practice structure, which you're probably all very familiar with, of RAIN, which I think originated with Michelle McDonald and has percolated through that insight meditation world. And it's a really wonderful, helpful framework for considering and practicing with the hindrances. And again, I really want to include kind of that whole realm of just mind states and emotions. So recognizing the RAIN, RAIN, and sometimes another N. So I might touch on those a bit as we continue. So images from the Buddha. You know, maybe you know these. And they're water images. So again, they're images which is likening the mind to a body of water. And sometimes, you know, I can practice that where I I kind of feel into my body, and then I kind of feel into the mind. And so if this mind was a body of water, what would it be like at the moment? You know, and the Buddha gives some examples for us in these five hindrance experiences. So aversion is likened to boiling water, the water that's boiling. And one thing I recently thought about these images is they kind of suggest also what might be helpful. So if you think of boiling water, there's a heat source, isn't there? Heating it up and making it agitated. So what if you take that heat source away? Right? So maybe for when we're caught in aversion in some different form, we think, what's heating this up? You know, can I just cool things down a little bit? Or what would help with that? So with sense desire, he likened the mind to like water with dye in it, coloured dye. And this, I think, touches on that aspect of how perception is distorted or filtered or shaped, directed, you know, like looking through a lens or like a coloured, you know, piece of plastic or something, and then everything looks a certain way. So once I was sitting by the sea in England, and you know, I love the sea, right? The sea is wonderful. It is innately beautiful, right? There's this very strong. Can you hear all the delusion here? You know, it's like, you know, if I lived by the sea, I would be perfectly happy all the time. Why don't I live by the sea? For goodness sake, Britain's an island. What am I, you know, this kind of very. So I was reflecting on perception, and at one point, and I sat on the beach, it's now quite near Guy House, a few miles away, and I was like, right, looking at the sea, and seeing if I could play with the perception a bit, and remembering that my husband, when he looks at the sea, he sees a massive parking lot, which like shocked me deeply when I first, I was like, how can you, you know, and parking lot obviously not highly pleasant or interesting. So I started to look and just see if I could let it fade, let my perception fade to it's just grey colour, shape, and the happiness started to fade. Oh. Now I'll say, go back up, see it really beautiful, oh, happy again. Lovely, look how the rocks and the sand and the sea. And then so I played a bit and I went back, and then I kind of went almost sort of down and like, could it be possible to see this as unpleasant? And I could say that was harder, but I began to sort of get that sense of, yeah, okay, I began to get a sense of that being possible. So the filtering of perception, I mean, not just with sense desire, I think it, you know, it works with all of the hindrances, right? Everything's boring. You know, sloth and torpor, there's nothing worth bothering about. The mat's boring, the floor's boring, my head's boring, my life is boring. The Dharma is boring. I've heard this 59,000 times before, for God's, why doesn't somebody say something new? You know, perception being filtered, perhaps. Yeah, or aversion, yeah? I mean, I know this is one of my top favourites. Oh, it's just not quite right. Or it's really wrong. Or, yeah, the body could feel a bit better. It's feeling quite good, but it's going to change. It's going to go downhill in a minute, just you see. that person over there, God, they're so annoying. You know, why can't they, you know, I don't know what, you know, fill in the blank. Like, I remember being on retreat here a few years ago, and for some reason, the noise of someone's slippers slapping along the floor was just put me into a rage. I was just like, this is outrageous. How can you be so insensitive? I just, you know. And I kept, you know, it started to leap. I was like, okay, come on. Let's practice with this. This is, and so I couldn't quite stop doing it, but I managed to put a bit on the end so I'd be like, you know, slap, slap, slap. Oh, no, no. Maybe well. Just like tiny, weeny, weeny bit of metta. Like, maybe well. Bit grudging. But actually it did end up sort of helping. So probably you've all experienced that, and that yogi mind, you know, the way retreat can intensify. I'm sure, you know, maybe we'll get together sometime and tell our retreat rage stories. I remember just like on guy at Gaia House, you know, he was so enraged during retreat and he just left. I heard this story later, I didn't know this person. And he didn't come to until he was 10 miles away. Just went, oh, this is me imagining. It's like, stop. Like, what's actually happening right now? And he came back, continued with the retreat. So I always think of that as being a kind of happy ending. Anyway. Yeah, apron rage. Okay, one more, and then we'll move on. So I was on work retreat at Gaia House. You can laugh now, I didn't then. And I was work retreat, yogi in the kitchen. And one of the, you know, staff people was not wearing an apron. Outrageous. And he goes, I would be like steam was coming out of my ears. You know, he should know. I'm wearing an apron. Everybody wears an apron. Does he think he's exempt from this? Why? He's special. It's health and safety. You know, it's like on and on and on. Maybe there's something about kitchens. But anyway, so I actually, again, this is not very flattering for me. I blurted out, why aren't you wearing an apron? I just couldn't contain it anymore. And so he just turned and looked at me, really like in shock, and said, you shouldn't be talking. Oh, gosh. Right, what was this talk about? oh, hindrances. Right, there's some boiling water for you, isn't there, with the aversion. Oh, dear. So sloth and torpor likened to water full of algae. It's really, you know, when there's a lot of drowsiness and sleepiness, and that sort of sludgy, foggy kind of, you know, again, different images maybe for different people. And like, what does that need? What do we, yeah, what's needed with that? And I'm sure you've also heard of the multiple hindrance attack, where all of these are either gang up on you all together or they come in sequence. First you're angry, then you're greedy, then you're really restless. You know, then you just go to sleep and then you wake up and you wonder, what the hell am I doing here? Doubt. You know, it's sort of, they often kind of encourage each other, I think. So doubt, oh sorry, restlessness and worry is likened by the Buddha to water with wind, kind of ruffling the surface. And again, I think, you know, that sense of whether restless, fidgety, moving, you can't really see what is happening or what you need to do. It's that kind of, and so you keep fidgeting and moving and being restless because you can't see what to do. So you keep moving, being fidgety, you know, it's like all of these hindrances, don't they kind of feed each other? I'm like, so angry that I'm so irritated. Or it's like, you know, how do you step away? How do you cool the water? How do you... So with doubt, I had forgotten this, but it's like a double whammy. It's likened to muddy water in a dark place. So, you know, with that sense of not only is the water muddy and you can't see, it's also in a dark place. And I think, you know, sometimes doubt is talked about as being the sort of most sort of, in a way, dangerous hindrance because, you know, you're in there in the dark and you just like, you just don't know what to do. So, again, what's needed there? What's needed when the mind is in that sort of place? Yeah. Okay, so, right. So I want to go on with this kind of R of rain, recognize, with teachings from Bhikkhu Nalio. Now, I'd like to offer that and then some images that to me kind of illustrate the teaching. So sometimes maybe it's helpful to hear a more analytical kind of commentary or analysis of the hindrances. So I'm slightly changing mode maybe from image to a more maybe logical analysis, and for some people's minds maybe that's kind of often the most helpful thing, but maybe both can be helpful. So I want to share this two quotes from Bhikkhu Nalio which point to something that I've come to feel is really important and really helpful to bear in mind in relating to any kind of difficult mind state, you know, very subtle, very, very gross, very confusing, very obvious, whichever. So let's see if you... It's really about non-reactivity. It's really about pointing to that kind of possibility of being kind of really still and steady and aware in the presence of what is really pushing, inviting you to get all into apron rage or whatever it is. You know, it's inviting you to get really, like, what is it to... So this sense of, non-reactivity, and then maybe some images just to help, hopefully, point and clarify. So Bhikkhu Nalio, practice requires an ability to face the presence of a hindrance in one's own mind without immediately reacting to it by trying to push it away, believing mistakenly that true meditation only takes place in the absence of any defilement. Much to the contrary, really transformative meditation takes place in precisely those moments in which the presence of a hindrance is honestly recognized and made the object of one's awareness. And then another piece from Bhikkhu Nalio, which I hope is kind of about the same thing. It actually is in a part of his book, which is more on the third foundation of mindfulness of mind. But I, I think it's also really, so just see if you can, this to me, it points to this kind of just, yeah, something really right here about this. Maintaining non-reactive awareness counters the impulse towards either reaction or suppression contained in unwholesome states of mind, and thereby deactivates their emotional and attentional pull. I'll just go through it again because there's a lot in there, and I'll put it on the board if anybody's interested. It's so maintaining non-reactive awareness counters the impulse towards either reaction or suppression contained in the unwholesome state. Just stop there. It's like, that's to me really interesting. That, again, it's this sense of the hindrance energy comes kind of loaded with tendencies to, you know, act out, believe in, you know, get reactive to, or suppress, deny. Yeah, kind of, no, this isn't happening. No, I'm not feeling this. Or, yeah, kind of. So this non-reactive awareness, by not kind of being hooked in to that, to reacting, or denying, suppressing, that takes the wind out of its sails, to use another image. It deactivates their emotional and attentional pull. So there's something here about appreciating almost the magnetic quality of the hint. It's like, you know, pulling you, kind of. I was thinking of it like it's like a tempter. Like we could see that as one of the manifestations of Mara, you know, this personification of the tempter in the Buddhist teachings, coming, you know, to pull you in, pull you away from steadiness, clarity, you know, clear seeing into reactivity. So sorry, I know there's a lot there, but if you are interested, you can look at it on the board. But maybe just get that sense of the possibility of, well, perhaps you know, you've experienced for yourself that sometimes the extraordinary, kind of just in them, even in the face of really strong, already activated emotions and thoughts, there's this, you can sort of feel this just stopping in the presence of that. So I wanted to share in relation to this three images from Ajahn Suchito, who is a very beloved teacher of mine, I know some of you. And I hadn't listened to this talk before, and I wanted to share these images, which seem very pertinent to this particular recommendation from Bhikkhu Nalio. So I hope, I'm going to try and channel Ajahn Suchito a bit here, so forgive me, because I didn't just want to read out to you what he said. So he says something like, sometimes hindrance, it's like a bear. And bear is coming. They're like, whoa. And what you've got to do is play dead. Just play dead. The bear will bat you a few times. Just play dead. Bear just gets bored, wanders off. Hindrance overcome. Yay. So, you know, I heard this and I was listening. I, of course, I love it because I love him and all these images and things. But then I actually brought it into my meditation practice, and I kind of intentionally brought the image to mind with something that is coming up for me in my life that I find quite scary. And it was really helpful. Like, that I could feel like using that image, I was imagining that situation and the fear, sort of a bit like the bear, and then I was just like, play dead. Okay. So the second one, he said, sometimes hindrance is like octopuses, and I was thinking it's octopi, technically. But anyway, okay. Hindrances are like octopuses. So, you know, it's like they've got all these tentacles in it, you know, and it's got one round your wrist, you get that off, and then another one goes around your ankle, and then you get that one off, and another tentacle comes around and gets you in the waist. And again, I took this into meditation, and I thought, wow, this is... and his recommendation with this one is just get really, 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 really still and small. Just get really small, still. And you slip out the octopus's tentacles. And then the third one was, so hindrances can be like a swarm of flies. I think this is like, around here at the moment, it's like, yeah, the flies. Mm. And his recommended kind of approach to this was, dunno, which, if you don't know, is English for I don't know. Like, dunno. Yeah. Well, dunno. So I don't know if you, yeah, it's just so interesting to me. I hope that makes some sense. Where it's the power of playing dead, you know, of being. Oh dear, this is hopefully not too ridiculous. So, oh gosh, time's getting away. I have only got to R of rain. I had lots more I wanted to share with you. So maybe just a little bit on the A of rain, the accept, because that feels like incredibly important, and it's touched on in the guest house, you know, that sense of somehow inviting, being respectful, being somehow willing to encounter, even befriend. So another teaching from... Let's see, who have we got here? Fred von Alman, a teacher from Switzerland. All that's really needed is careful, kind presence and mindfulness. Which I love. I know it's not an image, but I thought that was so lovely. And let's see. It's Pema Chodron. The healing comes from letting there be room for grief, for relief, for misery, for joy. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's, again, the image of having room. It's a little bit like the guest house, making room. So, maybe I'll end with just a little sharing the other set of similes from the Buddha, which express that, again, if we go back to the beginning, the sense of the mind free from these hindrances, free from disturbance, free from these difficult energies. So the absence of sense desire is likened to being free from debt. The absence of aversion is likened to having recovered from an illness. The absence of sloth and torpor is likened to being freed from prison. And the absence of restlessness and worry is likened to being freed from servitude. And lastly, doubt. And the absence of doubt is likened to arriving in a safe place, having crossed a desert. So I'll finish with another wonderful acronym. I'm not going to tell you the whole thing. I'll put it on the board so you can see it. Well, I just want to read you the last bit. And it's an acronym for working with the hindrances from Gil Fronsdal. And it spells Bella, which means beautiful in Italian. And the last letter, A, is appreciate its absence, right? So appreciating, that which is not present, right? That absence, and that's something the Buddha really recommends, isn't it? That we just, it's the presence and noticing the absence is just as important. And then Gil says, unhindered attention is a treasure. To be present without being hijacked by the hindrances is a joy. So I'll bring it to a close there. Thank you for your attention, for your good-heartedness, for your dedication to practice, for your willingness to bear with what's difficult, and for everything you have yet to discover. May all beings find freedom and peace of heart for their own benefit and happiness, and the happiness and benefit of all beings everywhere. Okay, so let's close our time together by chanting the reflections on the sharing of blessings. The goodness that arises from my practice, may my spiritual teachers and guides of great virtue, my mother, my father, and my relatives, the sun and the moon, and all virtuous leaders of the world, may the highest gods and evil forces, celestial beings, guardian spirits of the earth, and the Lord of death, may those who are friendly, indifferent or hostile, may all beings receive the blessings of my life. May they soon attain the threefold bliss and realize the deathless. Through the goodness that arises from my practice and through this act of sharing, may all desires and attachments quickly cease, and all harmful states of mind until I realize Nibbana in every kind of birth. May I have an upright mind with mindfulness and wisdom, austerity and vigor. May the forces of delusion not take hold, nor weaken my resolve. The Buddha is my excellent refuge. Unsurpassed is the protection of the Dhamma. The solitary Buddha is my noble guide. The Sangha is my supreme support. Through the supreme power of all these, may darkness and illusion be dispelled.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.